Blog Talk Radio.
This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
It's Freestyle Friday, and I am Glenn the Geek from Ocala, Florida.
And I'm Coach Jen from across the hall in Ocala, Florida, and you're listening to the Horses in the Morning Show on the Horse Radio Network for August 3rd, 2012, episode 459. This episode is brought to you by Kentucky Performance Products and Good Morning Horse World.
I can't take it anymore!
Thank God it's Friday!
I would like, if I may, to take you on a strange journey.
We worked all week so that we can eat and own a little piece of God's ground. Pushing papers and pens, red tape never ends. The stress can turn a smile into a frown. I need some horsing around.
Well, good morning, everybody. Thank you for joining us on this Freestyle Friday. And we have a busy show planned for you today. Jamie is off. She'll be back on Monday. Jennifer is here with me today. Thank you, Jennifer.
You're welcome.
We have a whole lot of guests planned for you today. But before we get into all of that, I know that many and many, many of you have been watching the Olympic coverage from London at Greenwich Park, and you've been watching, a lot of you have been watching it on the internet. Well, there's no voiceover for most of the, no commentary for most of the horse events over there. We're just watching the raw feed, and you get to see it. Now, I kind of like that. Jamie hates that. She'd rather have somebody talking and telling us what's going on. I kind of like just watching it in its pure form, like you were there. But one of the things that you see behind the stadium is this great big white building. And I've been wondering, what the heck is that white building? At first I thought, was it just a backdrop? You know, they built it for the Olympics to make it look all cool at the end of the arena.
It looks kind of like an enlarged version of the Lincoln Monument without Lincoln inside.
Exactly, and you know, it's really cool.
Yeah.
It's really cool. So it got me curious, and I did a little research, and this is what I found out. That whole building complex behind the arena is called the National Maritime Museum, and that white structure you see right at the end of the arena is called the Queen's House. And that was designed in 1573 by Inigo Jones, and it's been called one of the most important buildings in British architectural history. Apparently, it was built for the Queen Anne of Denmark in 1574. And she was born in 1574. Work began in 1616, but she died in 1619, so all the work was stopped. She never lived in it. And she apparently was a great patron of arts and architecture and building fancy buildings. Now, work resumed in a couple years after that for Queen Henrietta Maria, wife of Charles I, and then it was finished. Now, she did not actually get to live in it very long because Civil War broke out in 1642, and she hightailed it out to France. So she didn't get to live in it, but it was actually built for two different queens who auspiciously never got to live in it. So it was turned into 1937. It was turned into part of the National Maritime Museum, and restoration work was completed in 1990. It now hosts It's part of the museum's fine art collection, and it's actually open to the public. It will reopen again after the Olympics, and you'll be able to go in and visit it. It's free to go in and see it, and it is known for having one of the first spiral staircases without a center column, a standalone spiral staircase called the Tulip Stairs. And it's unsupported by that center column that you normally see. So that's what it was known for as being a first in doing that in architecture. So there you go. All you wanted to know about that big white building at the end of the arena.
Now, see, this begs the question. I wonder if it has some bad karma because nobody got to live in it. But so Henrietta, queen number two, didn't get to live in it. She had to hightail it out of England in the 1600s.
Yeah, she bugged out.
She bugged out, and can't blame her for that. It became part of the museum in 1937. We have a large gap in that house of residence.
Apparently, in the meantime, there were people living in it, and they got it added on to and all of that stuff. There's a whole history I skipped in the middle there, not to bore everybody to death. But,
well, send me the link to the rest of it, because now I'm really curious.
So that's what happened. That's the big white building at the end of the arena. It is not a facade. It is not a building they put up to look fancy and look very British. It actually was there to start. And, of course, the observatory is there, too, which is on the other side. You don't see that in most of our shots from the arena there. It's a very cool building in itself. So that's the history behind all of that. Now, coming up on today's show, Jennifer has booked a lot of guests. First of all, we're starting off today with Debbie Metcalf, one of her regular visits from Stolen Horses International, netposse.com, because she has a very heartwarming story of something that happened here this week that she's going to fill us in on. And it's good news after 10 years, so we'll talk about that. And then you have a guest coming on to talk about one of the best pacing racehorses that ever lived, right?
Yes, we're going to be talking to the author of a book called The Best There Ever Was, Dan Patch, who was a very famous standardbred racehorse back in the early 1900s. And he was really the first rock star athlete. So it really talks a lot about how the advertising machine in America began, as well as the horse and the horse's owner. So it's going to be a really fascinating story. I can't wait to talk to her.
And he had a series, and I'm sure that the book goes into that, and I'll be interested to hear a little bit about that. He had a series of very wacky owners, too. I mean,
this horse was surrounded by really interesting people.
Craziness. So we're going to learn about that. And then also we have Joe Most, who was on the show before, coming on with us at 10 o'clock, talking about the American Heart Association's Beach Ride. And that's going to be held at Myrtle Beach coming up here in the fall. And it sounds fascinating and apparently gets a huge number of people that come to it every year. So we're going to find out more about that as well. So we got a lot going on today, but I think we probably should start. What do you think? We start with our daily whinnies.
Okay.
My daily whinny goes out to Jimmy Tactor. Thanks to Dawn Deans for pointing this out. But it's a big weekend. Talk about racing this weekend and standardbred racing. It's a big weekend in the standardbred racing world because the Hamiltonian is this Saturday. And that is the start of their standardbred racing's Triple Crown. The Hamiltonian starts that. So that's coming up this weekend. And what's happening is that Jimmy Tactor, who is – let me get back up here to my right spot. Jimmy Tactor, who was the trainer of CU at Peelers, who we talk about endlessly on this show, has trained the favorite in this race, Uncle Peter. And he also will be driving his own horse called Guccio. So but he has two horses in the race, one that he trains and one that he trains and is going to be driving. So he will be in the race, Jimmy Tactor will, two different ways. And as I said, this is one of the biggest races in standardbred racing. It was named in honor of the Hamiltonian 10, who is the foundation sire of standard bred horse breed, also known as the father of the American trotter. It's held annually for three-year-old trotting standard breds, and it is held at Meadowlands Racetrack. So that's coming up on Saturday.
It's a big deal. Yeah.
Big deal. Now it's your turn.
My daily whinny is for a particular team at the London Olympic Games. This is an unsung team, a team that nobody thought early on would make any difference at all, but they have made a huge enjoyment of the it the repair crew at the stadium at Greenwich Park. On at least two separate occasions that I've watched on the live feed, the judges' stands have fallen apart right smack in the middle of the competition, and they have raced out there, and forgetting their own safety, they have repaired those judges' stands at record speed. I even saw one young lady, and those of us who have done this, you know, OSHA would have a cow. She was standing on a plastic folding chair holding up the roof of the judges' stand so that the guys could get the step ladder and repair it properly.
Yeah, it was quite a day yesterday. There was an absolute downpour at one point yesterday during a test for one of the Canadians by the name of Marcus. And it came down in bucketfuls, and then his horse kind of freaked out and he had to withdraw, which was sad. Because the horse stuck in there through the downpour and everything, then after the downpour, just kind of lost his cookies. But I felt so bad for him because it was coming down.
Yeah.
And that's the point I think, where the building fell apart.
Yeah, that's the second time that I know of. It might have done that in between times. It fell apart during the dressage for the eventing competition as well, and they were out there step ladders and duct tape and wire ties.
So that probably, even if it's a temporary building, you probably should use nails rather than Velcro, you know, at the Olympics. Probably a better
idea. I think
it's
on the tops of them, they have the tops are adorably decorated, probably because they know that the cameras are going to see it from the top most of the time. And that seems to be where the issue is. It's the really pretty tops. Yeah.
Well, I have to bust on the Olympic Committee a little bit. What, you know, you gave credit there to the repair people, but who made the decision to put the Olympic athletes' horrible mugshots on the website?
I know.
Could they have come up with nicer pictures of these Olympians than what looks like a mugshot for both of them? Most of them.
Have you noticed though that the mugshots for the eventers, they look much more harried? The dressage riders' mugshots, they look much quieter and more composed.
You know, I'm looking at, you know, speaking of which, Charlotte Desjardins is up right now. She's actually riding right now. Stephen Peters comes up in a little bit here after the break. We'll keep an eye on that for you. But Charlotte Desjardins is a beautiful girl. And I'm looking at her picture here, and it really looks like she had a rough night and is about to be incarcerated for public drunkenness. It's just pitiful, these pictures they use. But let's give everybody an update. As of this moment in time, the Germans are leading the way in the individual competition with actually two British riders sitting second and third. And the British, of course, were expected to do quite well. Charlotte's test is going to be critical to keeping the British team on top in the team rankings. Now, right now, it looks like with many rides, looks like maybe 10, 15 rides to go yet. We have Denmark leading the way, Spain, Australia, Germany, and then Great Britain. That will change as all the riders get through today. United States is not doing terrifically. We are currently sitting with Tina Conyott in 22nd place, and then Adrian Lyle in 29th. And then where am I seeing the third one here? I thought there was one more, and I'm not seeing it right at the – oh, Ralph Falca and Ebeling are sitting in 25th spot. So, and by the way, all the news articles this morning were about Ralph Falca, and most of them were Mitt Romney, you don't have a winner. they had that bent to them, which I thought was interesting. So, you know, they were thrilled. I know. They were thrilled with the test, actually. You know, they thought this horse did very well for being not a true campaigned horse here.
He's still pretty young. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now,
we'll
did you
keep
ever
the
see
on the,
you
on
watched
the
quite
dressage.
A bit yesterday. You watched quite a bit of dressage yesterday, and I got to give you credit for that because I know your eyes tend to glaze over once they get past halt at X.
I was doing other things at the time. I will say, sorry to say it all to dressage people, but I can't watch it nonstop.
Were you able to capture a snapshot in your computer-like brain? Was there a test that stood out to you or a rider?
I'm not talking
or...
about it anymore because I get in trouble when I talk about dressage. So I'm not mentioning anybody's test in particular. I'm just reporting the news. The other day I talked about the Germans win. I have to apologize to the whole country. I'm not doing it today. I'm just not doing it. Although I am looking forward to seeing Stephen Peter's test coming up here shortly. So,
if we play a lot of songs in a row, guys, it's because he's watching Stephen Peter's.
Yes, and if we miss it, if somebody could post on our Facebook page, if anybody is listening this morning at all, because they're all watching the Olympics, if anybody's listening and you could post what his score was on our page after he is done, that would be great because we're going to probably be in the middle of guests by that point. But we would appreciate all the help we can get there. And I'll give you a little bit of a rundown while Jennifer's getting our first guest lined up. I'm going to try and explain this, but I got to be honest with you. It's very confusing. But the way it works for dressage is after this first phase of the Grand Prix, which was happening yesterday and today, the best seven teams, including any teams that are tied for seventh place, and the best 11 individuals, including any tied for 11th place, who are not already qualified as a team member, progress to the next phase, which is called the Grand Prix Special. And the team medals are decided on the total scores of the Grand Prix, which has been happening over the last 2 days, and the Grand Prix Special, which is coming up. After the Grand Prix Special, then the best 18 individuals go through to the Grand Prix Freestyle. Riders are selected to go through on the basis of their performance in the Grand Prix Special only. So actually what they're doing these 2 days does not count towards getting to go through as an individual. That will be based on the special that's coming up. And then the Grand Prix Freestyle determines the medals in the individual side. So I know that's somewhat confusing, but that's how it works. So, I thought I'd try and explain that. I hope I got it out in somewhat of the best way possible. And before we go to our first guest, I wanted to mention a death, actually, that happened this week in the rodeo world, and that was with Brock Cresta. And he was a California steer roper and really a rising star in the rodeo circuit. He was well-liked. He was ranked number 12th in the world in team roping, and he was found dead Saturday in his trailer at the Cheyenne Frontier Days Rodeo in Wyoming, 25 years old. He was a son of an expert steer wrestler from Santa Rosa, California. And he competed on Friday in that event, and his body was discovered by his girlfriend, champion barrel racer Brittany Posey, who has been on our shows, when she tried to awaken him Saturday morning. So nobody's quite sure what exactly happened. Nobody's quite sure exactly what happened with that whole thing, but I'm sure we'll find out here in a little while after the autopsy is done. His service is being held today, so this was quite a shock to the whole rodeo world and something that you just don't expect when you wake up in the morning with a 25-year-old beside you. So our best to Brittany and to the family of Brock Cresta. Now, let me see here. So Jennifer, is Debbie going to be calling in as well?
I don't think so. I think Deanna's here, and we're just going to be chatting with Deanna.
Okay, so, all right, so I thought Debbie was going to call in and explain the story to us, but we will...
I'm sure Debbie can, because she was in on it, or Deanna can, because she was in on
okay.
it. Yeah.
All right, so let's talk to Deanna. So we have Net Posse come on a regular basis because they do good work, and they do good things in helping to reunite people with stolen and lost horses. And then this story came up the other day, and that's where Deanna comes into the mix. Deanna, tell us, I haven't talked anything about this story, so thanks for being on this morning. Tell us what happened and what your part of it was.
Well, good morning to you. What happened was I was browsing through Craigslist looking for a horse of a certain age and for my daughter. Just she's a 13-year-old. She's been doing well in school and everything, and I wanted to keep that up. So I decided, well, I have a horse, and so she loves it so much. So maybe I can find something reasonable and, you know, well liked by her and a good horse for her to keep the incentive up. So I found this horse on Craigslist, pictures and descriptions, and I started emailing the lady. And they probably live about 45, 50 minutes from us. And so we talked and sounded like he would be a good fit. And we thought, you know, maybe let's go look at him and then we'll decide. So we went out on last weekend, me and my family, and fell in love with him. And he was gorgeous. And the lady has had him for 8 years. And I asked his background because I have a horse that I don't know my horse's background. So I'm always interested to know. And she was telling me how she had him given to her by her pastor for training back in 03. And he did so well with her that he said, you know what, he's happy. You just keep him. And she gave him to her daughter until now she's graduating. So it made for the perfect story. And I said, well, where did he come from before then? She said, well, from what I understand, my pastor has another friend of his that's a pastor in San Antonio. And, you know, he had him wandering on I-10 back in 03, and he didn't, you know, have any room for him. And so they're friends, and he thought maybe he could, you know, give him a good home. Well, that intrigued me, and I was so interested in this horse. And when I got home, I decided, you know what, I just want to know, like, his lineage, or, you know, I would love to read the story about how he was found. Well, when I just decided I was going to look into his background, so I Googled deer and paint gelding I-10 lost in 2003, and
which
all of a sudden...
Noah has this gelding, Opie, has very distinctive paint markings.
I believe so, yes.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Yes, I mean, he has more of a chestnut paint. I mean, you know, he's actually a pinto, but he's just beautiful. I mean, he's inside and out. You know, he's a great spirited horse. And so it was more of a chestnut paint, which, you know, usually you'll see like the browns or black, but this was it was almost like a sorrel chestnut. So...
Right.
When I Googled it, all of a sudden the story, it came up, netposse.com, and I've heard of them before, but I didn't know exactly because I'm, you know, kind of new in this side of things. And so I clicked on the story because I was thinking lost, and before I knew it, I was just, like, stolen. And so I just, you know, paged down just, you know, out of curiosity, and all of a sudden I saw a little picture of the flyer of the side of him, and I thought, oh, no, and I clicked on it, and here it came up. Back from 2003, stolen horse. And I told my husband and my daughter, I said, this is that horse. And he's like, how do you know? And I said, look. And it was very obvious. And I thought to myself, what do I do? And I knew right away that I did not believe that the lady who owns him currently knew. I thought, well, I need to call because probably what happened was he was recovered and then, you know, that's what happened. So the next morning I came to work and I called Net Posse just because I just wanted to make sure, and not that I doubted anyone. I just didn't know. And so I figured, let me call them and see before I even become very interested. And as soon as I called, she found him in her database, which was an old file. And she said, that is the horse. And he has never been reported as recovered. And backtracking to the day when I found the flyer, my daughter looked at me and I looked at her and she said, Mommy, are you going to call? I said, what do you think? And she said, yes, you have to call. And I looked at her, I said, if he is stolen and he's truly still, you know, missing, she said, I'm not getting that horse. I said, no, you're not. And it was, she understood, and she just, you know, it was very, we all decided, you know, you have to do what's right if he is indeed still missing. But I was hoping maybe he was recovered and just, it wasn't updated because it was an old file. But then at that point, when I called and talked to Net Posse, Debbie, and I, and she instantly said no and started working on, this was probably right after lunch on, I guess it was Monday, and by Monday night, she had recovered the horse, and the current owner had no idea. She is heartbroken.
I was going to say, this story is kind of bittersweet in a way, because, you know, you have the current owners who were going to sell the horse, but still they've owned this horse for a lot of years, and the sheriff, you know, the deputies show up and take the horse from them when they had no idea.
Right.
You know, and apparently they showed up, what, in the middle of the night, the deputies, because they, you know, they knew that these people were trying to sell the horse, and, you know, here – and didn't want the horse to disappear on them, so they show up and rightfully so, it's stolen property. And then apparently Debbie had a heck of a time finding the previous owners, because they had moved to several times over the last 10 years.
Right, yeah, and none of the information was updated. And so her and I mean, I was trying to help as much as I could too. And finally we, you know, she said, I think it was like 1 o'clock in the morning or something, you know, I had gotten to see a picture she sent over the email, and it was amazing. It made me cry. And I woke my daughter up and I told her, I said, look, Savannah, this is why you do the right thing every time. And the look on her face with her kids sitting beside her the first time she got to see a picture of him was, you know, indescribable. I mean, it just melted my heart. And so, but going the opposite direction, I knew the lady that had him, I knew in my heart that she had no idea, and I really wanted to tell her, but I knew at that point I couldn't do anything until Net Posse took care of it. So when I came into work that next morning, I was praying, please let me have the email saying from her saying I need to talk to you, and of course it was there, and of course she, you know, I knew in my heart, and I had apologized because the way that it happened, because he's such a beautiful horse, and no one knew that maybe, you know, maybe she would sell him to somebody else, but she was being very selective. This was a hard decision for her. It was a family horse who was loved for 8 years. It took her 6 months just to even decide to, for sure, to sell him to a family that she knew he would be able to be ridden and stuff, because now that her daughter's going off to college, you know, she wanted someone else to be able to have the blessing of having him in their lives too. And he, you know, my daughter fell in love with him. He thought this horse was just amazing. So, yes, it was bittersweet because her heart was broken. Not that she already knew she was going to have to let him go, but the way that it happened. But she knew that that was the horse in the picture, too, right away.
You know, she posted, Debbie over at Net Posse posted, in the last, I'm going to read the last couple sentences of the article about this. She says, our hats are off to you, Deanna, for your courage, you know, in getting involved and actually, you know, taking a look at Net Posse and doing the right thing. And she says, this story is bittersweet. New wounds are open for one family and old wounds starting for the to heal for another. None of this should have happened. One act of stealing a horse has caused the dominoes to start falling in 2003, and it's one spineless act of a thief. And that's exactly right. I mean, you know, this all happened in 2003, and look how many people have been involved and have been affected now, 10 years later.
Right, right. And I can't even imagine being in her shoes if my horse was taken, not knowing, not, you know, always wondering, always looking anytime you see a horse or, you know, equestrian event or rodeo, always wondering for all of these years. And then, I mean, all of a sudden, you know, having the discovery of, oh, my gosh, this whole time, you know, here he is now. So I can totally understand and empathize with the fact that whoever did this is just, I mean, they're ruthless, and how they don't understand how many lives they've affected, because not only did they affect the owners, but they affected the lady who never knew. And even though she was selling him, she loved him with all of her heart, and she was just selling him and being very selective. And now me and my family, my daughter, who, I mean, you know, we haven't owned him, but we instantly bonded, and we were really seriously considering, you know, hey, we, you know, really seriously going to sit down and say, are we going to, you know, do this? And because once we decided we were going to do it, that was going to be, he was going to be with us forever. I mean, there's no, you know, that would have been, and so even if it would have been discovered then and I would have bought him and then later on looked and he would have had to go back home, it would have ripped the hearts out of our whole family too. So, I mean, I don't want this to ever happen to anyone, whether they're the buyer, the seller, the owner, and whoever's responsible for this. They need to be found, and, you know, I know that they're just going to have to live with themselves and what they did, but they really have affected a lot of lives.
Well, now, what's the disposition right now of Opie? Where's Opie at?
I believe that his owner, the original owner, is trying to work out the financial and freight logistics and the financial logistics, because I think that she's trying to secure a place for him to be. She lives in Arkansas now, and so I think that she's going to, and we're in Texas, so I think she's trying to figure out if she's got a spot to put him and to bring him home, because I know she would love to have him home. But on the other side of things, she, you know, he's been gone for so many years.
Yeah, her life has changed.
Yeah, I mean, her life has changed, and she has other horses, and the lady who currently owns him was selling him anyway because she needs, you know, to let him go to someone who will use him and who, you know, get the same benefit and rewards that he's given their family. So at this point, I think that he's still in custody with the authorities, and I believe the current owner is trying to figure out how to get him home to her, and if she can, you know, get a place where she's at even to take care of him up there, because she wasn't expecting to get another horse.
Right. Well, you know, good job on your part for doing the right thing. And, you know, I'm sure that Opie is going to end up in a happy home here one way or another. But you did the right thing, and congratulations for exactly, you know, exactly what they said in this article, for being the person who stepped up and did the right thing. And I think you've taught your daughter a very valuable lesson in this whole thing.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. It's it had ups and downs, because I knew in my heart that the lady who has him now had no idea, and to break her heart or to have it happen that way, it was really uncomfortable. But sometimes, you know, you just have to just hope that it's going to turn out right in the end, and know that, you know, it happens this way for a reason, I guess. And so I just had to, you know, I knew in my heart it was going to be okay, and I just knew that I had to do exactly what I'm supposed to do because of the situation. Like, I was hoping maybe it was found and it was just old and it didn't get updated, but, you know, now I want him to be reunited with his owner, who, you know, would be more than over the top with getting to see him and be with him again, I'm sure.
Well, thank you, Deanna. We appreciate you coming on this morning to tell the story. We'll post some links to these stories at Net Posse. It's netposse.com. If you see something, you know, on Craigslist and you're not quite sure, I know that my co-host Jamie goes on and checks almost all of them. She looks on at Craigslist. She checks Net Posse first. That's probably a good thing to do. Thank you, Deanna, and good job. Appreciate
you being
on.
Thank you so much. I enjoyed talking to you.
Well, that's as I said, a bittersweet story, but hopefully a happy ending for an owner that lost a horse 10 years ago. We're going to take a break for Kentucky Performance Products, our title sponsor today, and then we're going to be back with our next guest talking about one of the greatest racehorses of all time. Regular listeners to the show know that we love Kentucky Performance Products, and that's an easy thing to do because Kentucky Performance Products stand behind their products and they believe in them. Your complete satisfaction is guaranteed. If you are unsatisfied with any of their products, they will gladly refund your money. Does your horse or pony get fat on air alone? Is he living in a dry lot or turned out with a muzzle? Can't feed him more than a handful of grain and some hay? Then you need Microphase. Microphase is a great way to ensure your horse or pony gets all of the nutrients he needs to stay healthy without adding calories to his diet. Microphase contains the vitamins and trace minerals not found in grass or hay, and your horse will eat it right out of your hand. You can learn more about Microphase and all of the products from Kentucky Performance Products by visiting kppusa.com. That's kppusa.com. Check out Microphase. Well, we'll be starting a series next week with KPP on supplements and what you should feed and when you should feed it, because a lot of people just don't know and they just guess. So we're going to try and make that a little more clear starting on next Friday's shows. And before we get to Sharon, I wanted to say that last Monday, Jennifer, we did a commercial for Equity, you know, our favorite manure forks ever, the Shake and Fork and the Flex and Fork. Well, I mentioned Aubrey was probably using hers right now, and one of our listeners who has one of these and cleans about 8,500 stalls a day, it seems like, was she posted on her Facebook page right after I mentioned that, I am currently using my Flexin fork. I forgot to throw it in my car yesterday morning when I went to do another barn. By the way, she goes everywhere with her Flexin fork. Managed to break her regular fork in half on her mats. Guess I've forgotten how to treat the inferior product. I never used to break forks before. That is true. Isn't that funny? I mean, because you go back to using a regular fork, and, you know, the Flexin fork is so tough, you're just sticking it in things, and you're picking up stuff you wouldn't normally pick up with, or you're not worried about the mat because you know the tines aren't going to bend. So you just are a little more aggressive than you used to be. And she's right. You get more aggressive, and then you forget. And then you go back to using a regular fork, and you break it in half. See, that's what happens. So if you don't want to have to worry about breaking your manure fork in half, then you need a Flexin fork or a Shaken fork, either one. They're super tough. You can find them at equitymfg.com. And, you know, this comes from one of our listeners. Don't listen to me. Don't listen to Jennifer. Don't listen to Jamie. Or, by the way, there's several other hosts on the Horse Radio Network that also use these exclusively. Once you get a Flexin fork or a Shaken fork, you're not going to use any other manure fork. Go check them out at equitymfg.com. They cost a little bit extra, but they are worth the money, and they will last you forever. equitymfg.com. Thank you, Aubrey, for chiming in there. We appreciate it. All right, Jennifer, take it away.
Take it away. Up next, we have a new author that I'm not familiar with until now, Sharon B. Smith, who has written a book called The Best There Ever Was, and it is about a sports figure, but it is of the four-legged sort. It's all about a horse called Dan Patch, who is a real rock star in his day. And welcome to the show, Sharon.
Well, thank you, Jennifer.
So tell us a little bit about what prompted you to write the Best There Ever Was. What got you excited about the topic, and how the heck did you know about Dan Patch?
Well, I'll tell you, it was going on 20 years ago now. I worked at ESPN in the early days when they didn't have Major League Baseball or NFL or anything like that. And one of the things that they did have was horse racing, both standard bred and thoroughbred horse racing. There were several series that we had. Yeah, in fact, when they first got it, basically they went. I was a general sportscaster. They went into the newsroom and said, "Does anybody here like racing?" And I said, "Oh, I like racing." And so I became a color commentator and anchor of racing broadcasts basically during the 1980s, including the first probably half dozen years of the Breeders' Crown, which is the the series of races for standardbreds that take place in the fall. And during that time, I wasn't terribly familiar with standardbreds, although I certainly did know thoroughbred racing at the time. You kept hearing the name Dan Patch, mostly in terms of the awards at the end of the season, the Dan Patch Awards. And, you know, there was when I looked into Dan Patch, people in racing would say, you know, he wasn't as good as they said. He was a heavily promoted horse. They'd say he wasn't that good, but I wish to God we had one like him now, because he did bring the country, even half the world's attention to harness racing. And, boy, the sport could certainly use a horse like that today.
Yeah. So, so that kind of piqued your interest on, okay, this Dan Patch horse was something real. What happened next?
Well, I didn't really think much more about it. Actually, this is my sixth book. I wrote The Complete Idiot's Guide to Betting on Horses. And I didn't say, although my general feeling is
I got to find
sometimes
that one,
suggestive.
Jaren.
Yeah.
I got to find that book.
Yeah, well, I have my own special system that actually works pretty well. However, I'm not much of a better because, you know, I've been around horses all my life and I know what they can do, you know, that they can act peculiar and break down and get sick and not tell you and all the kinds of things that a horse can do. So I'm not inclined to bet a lot of money, but I wrote the book. They asked me to and I did.
So go ahead. Then you came to writing the book about Dan Patch.
Well, you know, it's actually kind of a long process because I started sending a proposal around probably about 7 or 8 years ago. And after it had been out for a couple of months, another book on Dan Patch came out, and I called my agent and said, you know, market, I don't think can use two of them because most people today don't know who Dan Patch was. And so she put it aside, and then 2 years ago she called me and said, you know, I started that proposal around again. It's such a good story, and it sold. So I said, oh, well, I guess I have to write the books, and I did. And it ended up being quite a bit different than the other biography that was out. I think it's been out about 4 years now. So I was happy I did it. He ended up being even more interesting figure than I thought he was going into the whole process.
Now, I wanted to ask, tell us, Dan Patch had a series of owners, and that was part of the wacky story around this horse. One of the wacky people the humans that were involved in Dan Patch's life.
Well, the first owner was certainly not wacky. He was a small-town horse lover from Indiana who, he's always sort of been presented as an ignoramus about horses who lucked into a great horse. Now, everybody who gets a great horse basically lucks into it. You do the best you can with the breeding and then, hope for the best. He actually, I believe from my research, knew a little bit more about horses than history superficially tells us. Came from a farm family, and I think he thought pretty carefully before he bought the mare, and then he picked extremely well in sending her to Joe Patchen, who was a outstanding pacing horse. The second and third owners were the interesting ones. The third owner, first of all, is the most famous because he was the snake oil salesman. He actually was a patent medicine manufacturer who promoted Dan Patch heavily. Yeah. He originally was doing patent medicine for human beings and decided, since there were like 10,000 others in the country at the time, he would go into the niche of horse patent medicine. So he, he sold feed supplements and medicines and so on. He spotted this good young horse and said, this could be a good vehicle. I'll improve his record and then be able to advertise that Dan Patch went from a really good horse to the best there ever was, thanks to my supplements. And basically, that's what happened. And I don't think the supplements had a darn thing to do with it, but he did become the world record holder after the third owner owned him. Back to the second owner for a minute, who only owned him for, less than a year. He was sort of a secretive man who remains secretive today, or at least had been until I did some major research. He actually was the owner of an illegal casino, several of them in Manhattan. And he, I believe, bought Dan Patch, who was very young at the time, hoping to sort of go straight, to sort of erase the source of his money and maybe launder it in racing and through owning a good horse. I don't believe he bought him in order to bet on him, because by the time he bought him, the secret was out. This was a really, really good horse. You weren't going to get much money on him. This was 1901 and 1902 that he owned the horse. So, the second owner, Manly Sturgis, illegal gambler, in doing the research, I came to the conclusion that perhaps he could have been a model for The Great Gatsby, F. Scott Fitzgerald. Fitzgerald was a generation younger. They had many places where their paths crossed, or where friends' paths crossed. And I think there was a distinct possibility that The Great Gatsby owned Dan Patch. Can't prove it, but I think it's a possibility.
Huh.
Yeah, isn't that interesting?
Yeah, isn't it interesting how history crosses when you really dig into it, how
right.
the cross paths of all of these famous figures in history that you don't expect to find.
Exactly, yeah.
Well, you expect to hear about racing people. Then
yeah.
That's it,
Gerald was an interesting figure. I could find no evidence that he was fond of horses or horse racing. However, he had a lot of friends who were. Including Ernest Hemingway. They were very close, and Hemingway was a great lover of horse racing. But it was Herbert Byard Swope, who was the friend of Fitzgerald, who actually was very close to Fitzgerald at the time that he was gestating Gatsby on Long Island. Swope was a great supporter of illegal casinos in Manhattan during the time that Manly Sturgis was there, and he was also a lover of horse racing. So I think that's where he heard the story of Manly Sturgis. Their backstories, Gatsby and Sturgis, are so similar, where they grew up and how they got into their illegal business. Gatsby was a bootlegger, according to Fitzgerald, and Sturgis was an illegal gambling operator. But, apart from that, they were very, very similar.
So the detractors, Dan Patch wasn't, the cat's meow that they made him out to be. He genuinely did hold speed records of all sorts, did he not?
Oh, he absolutely did. There is no doubt that he was a great, great horse. But because he was so managed and so promoted, it's really hard to say how great. He actually only raced for two seasons, and the first season was in a very minor fair circuit in Indiana. The second season was a full season on the Grand Circuit, where he went to the big time and proved what he could do. And then he raced a couple on the Grand Circuit the following year and then immediately went into time trials. So it's hard to know. He was never beaten in a full race while he was in competition. He lost two heats, both probably because he was, you know, manipulated in order to get a better price on the next heat.
Yeah.
Can't prove
so
that
he was,
either.
He was,
it was pretty obvious.
He was a time trials specialist, so much more than a campaigned racehorse, because I know in the thoroughbred business, time trials are not something that they do. In the standardbred business, they will set up one horse who is there to be timed to see how fast he can go around a set distance. And
right.
When you are a standardbred, the distance is always 1 mile.
Yes.
And
yes.
For our audience who doesn't understand how this works, and what they do is they put a couple of one or two or three other horses on the track with them, and those horses'
right.
sole job is to give the one taking the time trial someone to race.
Exactly.
He was a real specialist at the time trial. Now, I don't think you see a whole lot of time trials in this day and age, do you?
You know, you actually don't, and it just occurred to me you hardly ever see them anymore. As recently as the time I was covering it for ESPN, there still were quite a few time trials. I remember going out to, you know, I think it was Ohio to see Nihilator, you know, Niatros's first and best son, or out of his first crop and best son. Time trial, he actually failed, although not by much. But, you know, you never hear about it, probably because, you know, the tracks are good. They can probably get their best time in a racing situation. They don't really need to.
And
I don't know. It's a good question.
And this
you
was
cannot
a day,
bet
too.
On a time trial.
And, you know, this was a day, too, back then in the late 1800s, early 1900s, standardbred racing was much, much bigger than it is today. It was equivalent, as I understand it, to thoroughbred racing, wasn't it?
Well, it was bigger than thoroughbred racing is today. If either of the racing sports were as big as they were then, we would all be jumping up and down in glee. It was the most attended sport in the country. There was no comparison. One year, Dan Patch drew an average of like 80,000 people per appearance. Now, these were time trials again, but they drew enormous crowds. And, the Kentucky Derby, Preakness and the Belmont can, well, maybe not so much the Belmont, but the other two can draw those kinds of crowds, but nothing else anymore. But he would do it on a regular basis. And other horses as well would draw crowds of 20, 30, 40,000 people. It was a huge, huge sport at that time.
Well, and we have to remember, too, that at that time, people drove horses to get places. I mean, the cars weren't in then. So you were driving. Driving was a part of everyday life. So driving and racing was something that you aspired to, much like NASCAR is today for us.
Yeah, I think that's a very good comparison, because you could sort of go to the races and sort of imagine that was you and your horse, you know, if you
right.
happened to have
right.
a big horse. But you could imagine it. You could see yourself doing it, which most people couldn't if they were going to a boxing match, and baseball was pretty rudimentary at the time. So you didn't have that feeling. Kids didn't play baseball that much growing up. So it was the sport of the people. And one point I got to in the book, it was the sport of the middle class. Boxing was sort of for lower class people, and then tennis and golf, such as they were for upper class people. But racing was for everybody. And so everybody went to the races and paid attention to what was happening.
Well, this is very neat.
It sounds like this is going to be a fascinating story. I can't wait to get myself a copy of it. It's going to be my next one.
I hope you enjoy it when you do.
and it just sounds like, again, just like in Seabiscuit and Secretariat and other books, quote, about horses, this is a fascinating story about the horse, but the people around him and the times and the culture and being a history buff and all. So I cannot wait to get it. Now, where can folks buy the book, The Best There Ever Was?
Well, you know, it's a normally available book. Some bookstores will have it, but, of course, since it's racing, and we know where racing is these days, not every bookstore is going to have it, but it can be ordered through any of the online, or you can order it at a bookstore, too. But Amazon has it, Barnes & Noble has it, and if it's not in the store, you know, they can order a few. It'll be there very quickly, because it's a regularly released, popular type book. It's not a specialty book at all, which is good. I hope a lot of people who don't know a thing about racing read it, because I think they'll be amazed. It's been one of my goals ever since I worked at ESPN to get people to appreciate both racing and harness racing. And I try to get, you know, flat racing people to realize harness racing is a good sport. The horses are great. You know, they're agreeable horses. And,
yeah,
you know, it's fun to go.
We're big fans of the Standardbred here at the Horse Radio Network. Now, the biggest question of all, drum roll please, is there a movie in the works?
Well, you know, not that I know of. I think it would make a great movie. And, you know, an interesting thing is that in 1948, the very first Seabiscuit movie was made. It was, you know, not very good. It was, you know, the kind of movie from 1948. The same year, the same director, I believe, it was certainly the same company, produced Dan Patch. Totally unrealistic. I mean, they took some of the same names and, you know, changed the story. But so in 1948, he was worth a movie along with Seabiscuit. I don't know now. It would certainly be great. People would enjoy it.
I think that's the next big horse movie should be the best there ever was. Although they might have to change the title because it makes it sound like a boxing movie that already happened a long time ago. But
well,
maybe the story of Dan Patch.
I chose the title because that was one of the many names you know, they used for him in the headlines and so on. It was The Most Wonderful Horse in the World was one of them. There were a whole bunch because he was such a well-publicized animal that, you know, there were all kinds of titles he enjoyed.
Well, thank you so much for stopping by with us this morning, Sharon. This has been fascinating. I'm going to hop on Amazon, going to go over to Horses in the Morning, click them on my Amazon button, and order myself up a copy of this, and I'm going to waste an entire rainy weekend because hurricane season is coming. And I'm going to enjoy reading it. And best of luck to you with the best there ever was.
And good luck with the movie. Sell the movie rights for big bucks, okay?
I'll tell them. They better make a movie.
That's right. Thank you, Sharon.
Thank you so much.
Would make a great movie, I think. Just all the characters that were around this horse and you know, the horse itself. And racing movies have done very well recently. Well, we do have on a different side of things, we have an update now from the world of dressage, and Stephan Peters did do his ride. If anybody saw it and could tell us what they thought on our Facebook page, that would be great. But this is the update as of this minute. Stephan Peters had a 77.7, put him now into fourth place. Charlotte Desjardins did come through for the British and has her in first place right now. She had an 83.6. She was, get this, Jennifer, she is almost 4 points ahead of her nearest competitor, which in dressage at the top is huge. She has an 83.6. And then the German has a 79.1 that's in second place. That puts Great Britain back in the top of the team rankings again at this point, with Denmark right after that, and the United States in third, thanks to Stefan's efforts. We only have, I think, 5 riders left to go, and one of those riders could change this whole thing up again, and that's Adelinda Cornelissen with Parseval. So she'll be second to last to go today, so we'll be anxious to see. Probably by the time the show's over, we'll have the rankings of dressage as it stands before they go into this weekend, and I talked a lot about that earlier, so I won't go into all of that again today, but that's what's going on right now over in the world of dressage. We're going to take a break for our song, and I need to get a drink of water because I'm doing a lot of talking today. But thank you, Jennifer. That was an absolutely fascinating interview. I appreciate you putting that together. We'll be right back. The song today is If They Knew a Cowboy. But first, we're going to hear from Equestrian Collections for the product of the week. And then we're going to be back to talk about the American Heart Association's beach ride in Myrtle Beach. Glenda Geek here, and I am with Debbie from Equestrian Collections with the Equestrian Collections product of the week. And actually, this week, it's a lot of products.
Yes. I just wanted all of our customers and listeners to know that here at Equestrian Collections, we have a section on our website called the Outlet Store. That's a place where we put items that they're up to 30 to 40% off, some of them all the way up to 70% off. And the way this works is if we have a vendor who has an item that, say, is sold out in a certain style or color, and so we won't be able to get any more of those, but we have some in stock and we need to go ahead and move them out to make room for new things, we put them on our outlet store and we reduce the price. So that's where you can get things that you can't always get anywhere else. We also, if we have returns that maybe have a little scuff on them or something like that that we don't want to resell as new, we can put them in the outlet store, cut the price, and you can get a great deal on that. To get to that, you can go to our homepage, click on sales and clearance, and then there's a little tab there that says outlet store. One thing to remember, these things are returnable. They're returnable, but only for store credit. So if you buy from the outlet store, you can return it, but what you will get is a store credit, and then you can use that store credit to buy other things on our site. So it's really a great place to go and find things that at such great prices, all top of the line, all regular vendor stuff, just maybe has been here or is sold out or something like that. So come visit our outlet store and see what you can find.
Over 35 pages of stuff, everybody, right now on the outlet store. That's a lot of items at EquestrianCollections.com.
What they want to be, that what they've got's not who they are, and living fast won't get them far, and it's hard to find a hero on TV. But if they only knew a cowboy, they'd probably want to be one, 'cause he can show you how, boy, if you've ever seen one. Well, he's tough as you'll find, and he's callous, but he's kind, and he knows where he comes from. Yeah, if the kids these days learn the cowboy ways, they'd probably want to be one. Some folks say he's a dying breed, West is one, and now there ain't no need to live like you was born 100 years ago. Back in the days when your word was a nod, when you'd fight for your country and your faith was in God, and the code of the West was branded deep in your soul. Well, if they only knew a cowboy, they'd probably want to be one. He can show you how, boy, if you've ever seen one. 'Cause he's tough as you'll find, and he's callous, but he's kind, and he knows where he comes from. If the kids these days learn the cowboy ways, they'd probably want to be one. Well, he's tough as you'll find, and he's callous, but he's kind, and he knows where he comes from. If the kids these days learn the cowboy ways, I bet they'd want to be one.
Well, that was from Dan Roberts. You can find all of his music at oldbootsmusic.com, and that song was called If They Only Knew a Cowboy. And we are here. I am Glenn the Geek, and have Coach Jen with me today here on Horses in the Morning. Jamie is off today. She'll be back on Monday, so I hope she has a terrific weekend. Hope you all have terrific weekends, but we have another guest or two before we end the show today. But first, I wanted to say that this show is sponsored by Kentucky Performance Products. You can find all of their products at kppusa.com. Our Horse Radio Network highlight show is the Stable Scoop Show that I do with Helena every week. It is now out, and we have Emma Winter on, who's a top event rider, mother, and business owner, and she's been on our show before, but she returned to chat about the Olympics and what their thoughts were, her and Mike Winter, the two eventers over there in England, and also talks about her family and what's going on at Wayfarer Eventing. Plus, we spoke to a lady who's putting a book together called Get That Horse Out of the Kitchen, and she's looking for stories and recipes and ideas for her book. So you can hear all about that over on the Stable Scoop Radio Show, and you can find all of our shows at horseradionetwork.com. Aubrey checked in and said that Charlotte Desjardins' test was beautiful, as was Stephen Peters. Rebel, Stephen's horse, was accurate and nicely forward in a lot of the tests, and she particularly liked the amount of rein he was able to give for an extended walk and the nice forward canter he showed between the pirouettes. So thank you for checking in, Aubrey, and giving us an update on the dressage that's going on right now. I'm sure most people are going to listen to our show recorded, Jennifer, because they're watching the dressage right now and certainly not listening to us. Just saying.
Yeah.
let's go to our next guest who's actually not watching the dressage right now and is listening to us, because he has no choice. He's going to be on the show. And that is Joe Most, who's returning to the show. He's been on the show before. He was the sponsored rider for Kentucky Performance Products in America's Favorite Trail Horse Contest last year, and we had him on talking about that. And he is actually helping out with another cause that's very dear to my heart. Both of my parents actually passed away of heart disease and heart problems. And my mom had her first heart attack when she was 52 and had four subsequent heart attacks after that. So what you're doing here, Joe, I definitely want to hear about, because I think it's for a terrific cause. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. So tell us about the American Heart Association's Beach Ride.
Well, this is the 31st annual Heart Association Beach Ride. It's going to go on October 31st through November 4th at Myrtle Beach. They have it at Lakewood Campgrounds, which is a five-star campground.
We stayed there, and it is a beautiful campground right on the beach.
It is. It's gorgeous. Yep. It's over 200 acres, and it's a five-star campground, so it's phenomenal.
Well, and so have you been there before, or is this your first year?
This will be our 10th year. My wife Penny and I have been going for the last 10 years. We just wouldn't miss it, not at all.
Now tell us what happens. Tell us about the time that you spend there. What exactly goes on?
Okay, well, they have all kinds of events. They'll have a poker run, a chili cook-off. They have nightly entertainments, silent auction, educational horsemanship clinics by Perfect Partners Equine. They have vendors on Vendor Row. This year, Tom C., Best of America on Horseback, is going to be filming a show for RFD TV. And, of course, Kentucky Performance Products will be there. It's just you can ride as much as you want, as far as you want, within the limits. It's 20 miles, or you can ride the whole 20 miles or just ride a short distance. And, of course, all the stuff going on at the campground, there's never a dull moment.
So you can actually just go out and ride on the beach when you want to, or is that a set time when you're there, or?
You can go out and ride at the beach anytime you want to, up until Saturday. Then the organized ride, you don't have to take the whole ride. You can ride just a short distance or try to complete the whole ride that day. But all during the week, it's free ride. Ride as you please.
Well, that's pretty cool. I mean, the beaches down there, Myrtle Beach, are absolutely beautiful.
It is. It's a beautiful beautiful time of year to be down there. There's very few bugs. Packed for any weather. The weather could be 80 degrees one day and maybe 40 degrees the next day. So we always go prepared.
Fortunately, I think you're right after hurricane season. You're at the very tail end of hurricane season. So you're probably not – when we stayed there last, which was many, many years ago at that campground, that's when Hurricane Hugo hit, and we actually got kicked out of the campground. They came around while we were on the beach and with bullhorns saying you had to leave, pack up, get out. And then the next day, that campground was completely flattened. There was, like, nothing left. I think you probably remember that time if you've been gone that long.
Oh, yeah. Fortunately, I think we missed that.
Now, tell us what horse you're going to be taking. Let me guess.
Tough. I'll be right. Yeah, I'll be riding my little horse Tough, and my wife will have her horse Wimpy. Well, we didn't plan that play of names. That's just how it worked. That's just how it worked out.
Doesn't she say to you, how do I get the Wimpy horse and you get the Tough horse? Does that ever come up when you're fighting, you know, before bed at night?
No, never.
So Tough was the one that you actually competed at America's Favorite Trail Horse Contest with.
Yeah, yeah. He's a product of my wife's stallion and my mare, so he was actually our firstborn male child. So we really have a really strong connection with him. He's very photogenic, and he's a real ham in front of the camera. He poses. He'll pose for you.
Now, you've taken this horse. I mean, you guys travel a bit, and you really get to ride, you know, all over the place. A lot of the people in our audience, are listening and have never ridden on the beach. We had that opportunity up in New England. But, tell people what that's like. There's just nothing like riding on the beach and having the waves and seeing the horse's reaction for the first time and all that. It's just cool.
Oh, it is. It's wonderful. And the beach down there is so wide. It gives you plenty of room to move around and maneuver, and gives your horse a chance to get in and see the ocean and enjoy it. It's just an absolutely once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. It's, you really don't want to miss out on, because it is so nice down there. And they don't allow horses on that beach down in Myrtle Beach, but once a year, and I believe that's the only time you can go down there with this many horses. There's usually anywhere between 1,000 and 1,200 horses. I believe that's what the number of horses was. But you're never crowded on the beach because the beach is so big down there.
Now, this is not normally a horse-friendly campground, is it?
That's right. You can't go down there at any other time of the year and stay at that campground with your horses. And Lakewood and the Heart Association does a tremendous job. They have people constantly going around the campground cleaning up after the horses, and you'll never see a pile of manure stay for long. And they just keep this campground immaculate.
I was going to say, do you guys all, after you do the big trail rides, do you all have to go out at night on the beach with buckets and shovels?
No, that's not a part of what we need to do.
the beachgoers would love that after 1,000 horses have just ridden on the beach.
Surprisingly, there really is none. I believe the birds and the surf just clean it and wash it away.
Take care of it, huh?
It's tremendous, yeah. It's really neat to watch.
That is cool. Now, one other question for you. Obviously, this is for the benefit of the American Heart Association. How are they raising money? How are they raising money during this event?
Okay. So your rider fee goes to the Heart Association, which that'll be tax deductible for people. And you can go to their website. It's AHABeachRide.org, and get all the information that you need. You can raise your money by getting donations for yourself to go, and that's pretty much how they're raising. They raise the money. I don't remember how much they actually raised last year, but it was phenomenal. It was a lot of money, and
With 1,100 participants, it would be. Yeah.
Right. And if people just go to that website, it'll spell everything out for them, and they can find out everything they need to know about that.
Well, terrific. This is looks like a lot of fun. The daily rate is not that bad for the campground itself. If I'm reading it right here, it's in the $40 range, which is not bad anymore for campgrounds that have that kind of amenities that this particular one has. So check it out, and it is in October, correct? It is October 31st through November the 4th.
That's right. And if people go to Tufts Saddle Club, The rider's fee is $150, and if they go through Tough Saddle Club, they can get $20 off their rider's fee.
All right. So, and what and that website is?
And the website for Tough Saddle Club is they can go to mostquarterhorses.com. That's M-O-S-T, quarterhorses.com.
All right, terrific. Well, thank you so much for joining us again, Joe. It's good to talk to you again, and have a terrific time at Myrtle Beach.
Well, thank you so much. We appreciate the opportunity to be on your show again.
All right, thanks, Joe.
You bet.
And
thank
you. Of course, Joe is a sponsored rider of Kentucky Performance Products, our title sponsor for today. Well, Jennifer, have you been? Are they done? Did Cornelison go yet in the dressage? Do you know?
Let's look up here.
Have an update?
No, she's under next, so we have to talk some more because we have to have that on the air.
All right.
I turned my feet on because I don't think I've ever seen Parsifal go. I had a comment. What was it going to be? Oh, you have another ad to take care of before we get too far in here.
Yes, we do. And want to talk about that next, and that's Field Guardian. Of course, you know, we've been talking about Field Guardian for the last couple of weeks now and how we use Field Guardian fencing for our property here in Florida, here at the studios of the Horse Radio Network. And our Field Guardian fence keeps our wild, wicked quarter horse Beaker in there. You know, he's just crazy. Actually, most of the time he stands under two of the trees out there and just hangs out and looks like he has a coma. But you know what? Occasionally he shows a little bit of spunk. And I'll tell you what, we have the tape. We have the Field Guardian tape fencing. And that stuff works. I mean, with the charger hooked up, he touches his butt occasionally. If you go around the edge and you're cleaning the piles out of the paddock, you'll see a little divot in the sand. And that divot is from when he fell asleep and touched the fence, or he decided to challenge it and loses. It really does work. And I know you've gotten shocked by it a couple of times, but I really like the tape more than any wire we ever had in the past. It you can see it. It looks nice. It's not. It doesn't look terrible. And it really the Field Guardian products hold up. The insulators are all holding up, and everything we bought from them is really holding up. And what's nice is you just give them a map. And draw out the dimensions and put where you want the gates to be and you email that over to them, and they tell you exactly what you need to buy. They give you the whole packing list, and then they send you out the product, and you put it up. It was easy to put up. It's easy to maintain, and the gates are wonderful. They have the retractable gates that you don't see too often. Those are nice. We just like everything about our Field Guardian. Yeah.
I love the tensioners, yes. Because every so often we'll have a limb fall on the fence. And it holds up beautifully. It kind of falls there and kind of springs back. And then the fence will get a little baggy, and they have these awesome tensioners that you put on the corners. And all you do is kind of snug it up like an old-fashioned belt, and your fence is beautiful again.
Yeah, it does work very nicely, better than any of the others we've tried in the past. And we did a lot of research before we bought this fencing, so check it out, fieldguardian.com. Fieldguardian.com is where you can find that. Jennifer, you said that you read some comments. Remember we talked about cross country the other day and how it was slick? People were slipping in the beginning of the day and they were having a little bit of trouble, and we were speculating whether the grass was too short or what the problem was, and you found some comments from some of the riders.
I did. I was surfing around over on thehorse.com, and they had a fascinating overview of what happened on cross country day. It was really well written. Kudos to thehorse.com. Great Britain's Mary King said, and I quote, "I said, give me the biggest studs you've got," unquote. Her mount, Imperial Cavalier, went on course with, get this, 1.5-inch studs behind.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, my God, yeah. Philip Dutton, who
you don't want those stepping on your toe.
No. Philip Dutton, who also went later in the day, went out with plenty of ammunition, as big studs as I've ever had behind. And Philip Dutton's been doing this a while, so it was, and they talked about how the riders were, when they get back, they talk to each other about, you know, the state of the footing and all that kind of things, and the vast majority of those slips that happened, not so much because of rider error in that they were going too fast or something, but the horses were just seemed to be randomly slipping. Most of those happened in the mid to later part of the day, And then by the time the last 20 rides went, you really didn't see it as much because they had the turf had changed. It started out kind of soft, and then it got harder as the day went on when the sunshine came out. And they had figured out the turf and what road studs they needed. And I can just imagine the conversations back in the barns when they opened up the stud kits.
Yes. And I'm sure whoever was selling, whoever was in charge of having the little pack shop there ran out of the 1.5-inch studs that day.
Yes, they were probably buying them from one another.
Can you imagine? That's like walking in high heels, you know, on your tippy toes. The horses walking around there were like in high heels.
Well, yeah. Can you imagine? That's funny. Oh, my goodness.
Well, we have, as I said, Jamie will be back next week. She'll be back on Monday, and we have a lot of interesting guests planned for you next week as well. And it looks like, Adeline, do you have the feed going at this point? Because it looks like she is in the ring at this point.
Oh, we don't have the feed going.
Oh, she's in there now. We're gonna chat here for a minute or two. I'm looking at their mugshots again. Boy, it's driving me crazy, that whole mugshot thing they put up on the website here. Oh, let me mention this. We did a survey yesterday, and we're going to start doing this. Yeah, I forgot to mention this. We did a survey yesterday. We're going to start doing this on our Facebook page every day. We're going to ask you a new survey question, and we're going to give you the results here on the show. By the way, my studio is gone. Jennifer, is yours up? Mine disappeared and won't come back. So, okay. So we're going to ask this. It's very simple and easy to do these survey questions. We will see them posted on our Facebook page. You just click one link. You click one other button. You don't have to put in your email address. You don't have to sign up for anything. You just vote. That's it. It's two clicks and you're done. And they're very simple survey questions, but we're gonna use them for our show. Well, sometimes we'll ask questions that are regarding our show. Sometimes we'll ask you silly stuff. Yesterday we asked, do you like NBC's coverage of the Olympics? And the choices were, I am with Jamie and think it is crap. I am with Glenn and think it is okay. Glad to have any coverage at all. And what Olympics? Well, this was the result as of a couple minutes ago. Let me take a look at this and see, make sure it hasn't changed since yesterday. Let me pull it up. My Facebook page. I'll tell you what, nothing's cooperating today like it should be.
That's because your dressage feed's sucking up all your bandwidth.
I know, I don't have it on. I don't have it on yet right now. Okay, so the results are I am with Jamie and think it is crap got 68% of the votes. I am with Glenn and think it is okay got 23%. Glad to have any coverage at all is 5%. And what Olympics is 5%? My guess is that was not a horse person. So I was kind of surprised. I thought Jamie and I would be even on that one because I've been kind of happy with the NBC coverage. I think compared to past years when I could have just thrown my TV out the window, you know, having the online and then the coverage they've been doing, they've been showing more of the events and less of the, you know, the pieces from home about the families and all that stuff. They've actually been showing competition and building. Now, the fact that it's delayed is a bit of a problem. I understand that, and I don't know how you avoid that, but I haven't been totally on. How about you? I don't know. I thought it's been okay.
I've been happy with it, but I've watched almost exclusively the live feed. But I think part of it that makes a huge difference, especially for you, is the number of networks that have coverage now. They have, what, 4 or 5 different networks that are carrying Olympic coverage. Gives you the opportunity to surf. Exactly. You can watch badminton for 30 seconds. You can flip on over to sumo wrestling and watch that for a minute and a half. Then you can zip back to beach volleyball and watch that for 15 minutes. And then you can go around and around and grab a glass of wine and then watch gymnastics for a minute and a half.
That's what makes it good for you.
That's why you like it.
I have to be honest. If I come across beach volleyball and it's the girls in the bikinis, I watch for more than 15 minutes. I pretty much watch all of that. So I got to imagine that beach volleyball gets some of the highest ratings among the male demographic, if they were honest. I think that probably does pretty well. Probably better than dressage in the male demographic, I would say.
It's just weird, though, watching the beach volleyball, and not only are the athletes bundled up and wearing earmuffs, the crowd behind them has, like, umbrellas and scarves and wellies.
I have watched a couple of days of beach volleyball where it's been nice, but for the most part, it's been crappy cold, and they've had to actually wear coats. They actually had to change the rules about dress in beach volleyball so they could wear more clothing. Because apparently it was against the rules.
Yeah.
You had to wear a bikini, and they actually changed the rules, and a lot of them are wearing the one-piece suits now, and probably get sand in a lot less places, too, that way.
Sand. Ooh.
Yeah, and I'm still waiting for the Cornelissen's results to come in here. Of course, she is from the Netherlands, and you know, she's a rider that we all look to because Percival is such a terrific horse. So we're still waiting for those results to come in. What else did we want to mention here? So look for today, hopefully sometime after the show, usually in the afternoon, we will post the next survey question, and then we'll talk about them the next day on the air. So we'll do that coming up. And
the dressage show, their preview of the Olympics was so much fun. I finally got to listen to that the other day. That really helped, because if you thought scoring for tennis was crazy, just try to do scoring for dressage. People complain about scoring for eventing because you have to combine the scores of three different phases, and it's a penalty score versus a good score. That ain't nothing compared to how they score dressage. That's bonkers.
It is, and it's very convoluted and complicated. And I did go over earlier in the show, if you want to listen back, if you missed it, I did go over how it's going to work. And I'm going to look at the timetable here. It looks like the Grand Prix special now, which is the next part of this particular phase of the competition to determine the team winner and also who goes on for the individuals, is on August the 7th at 10 a.m. So that, August the 7th at 10 o'clock, it looks like. So that won't happen until next week on Tuesday. So there'll be a break, in the equestrian competitions here coming up.
Oh, wow, I'll be able to ride for a couple of days now. So that's what all the cues are next to the scores here on my London2012.com page that has the live scoring. It has their rider's score and then has a cue next to it. So that means they've qualified to do the GP special, yes?
That would be my guess, correct. Yes.
our best estimated guess.
That's what I'm guessing at this point. And I'm just trying to find on the website. I do like their website, too. At least you can sort of follow along. Yeah, it is going to be Tuesday, August the 7th at 10 a.m. British time.
They're all out sharpening their pencils because poor old Adeline's score still hasn't come up yet.
Yeah, if anybody that's watching can post on our Facebook page what's happening. Did she show up? has she disappeared from the ring at this point? Did the judges stand blow down?
Awesome.
Aubrey typed in here, too, on her Facebook page. And she said, I think NBC's coverage has been fantastic. How can we complain about 24 hours total eventing coverage? I watched the live feed early before work, as well as rewound it and watched what I missed at various points in the day. I haven't touched the TV, so can't comment on that. Missing Eventing Nation's live blog for the dressage, though. Yeah, a lot of eventers did tune into Eventing Nation's live blog. You know what I did go back and do on the NBC page is this whole controversy over the badminton and how they kicked out four of the teams for basically throwing matches, trying to get better buys. And I went back and watched the match between Thailand and China, the one that caused the major controversy, and it was terrible. And the audience was booing. I thought they were going to start throwing things at these players. It was terrible. They were hitting all the serves into the net. The other team would hit the birdie over the net, and they would totally just, like, turn their backs and walk away. They made no pretense that they were trying to throw this game. At least they could have faked it.
What were they thinking?
I don't know. Apparently, this is done. It has been done in the past at numerous tournaments, and nobody ever complained. Well, they came out, and they actually the judge or whatever the referee or whatever came out and gave him a black flag, which I guess is like getting a black flag when you're playing soccer and things, and warned them, and then they continued to do it. So it was immediately after that. Then the federation came out and said, "You guys are out of here." Well, when I read. The Chinese team, the one girl was like one of the number one players in all of China and all the world. She actually had to go on Chinese TV and apologize to the nation and then announced her retirement immediately after that, which I kind of felt bad because you know darn well that they were told to do that, you know, that this was something they were told to do. Oh, the results are in. And it looks like Adeline Cornelissen for the Netherlands is now, oh my gosh, she got an 81.6 and is now sitting in second place behind Charlotte Desjardins. So there is one more rider to come from Germany. And of course, we can never count the Germans out. So there's one more rider coming up here shortly. But I think you're probably going to see the standings stay about the same. So right now we are looking at the team rankings as Great Britain in first place so far, second the Netherlands, third Denmark, fourth the United States, yay, fifth Spain, sixth Sweden, thank you, Jennifer, seventh Poland, eighth Australia, and right now we don't have the final for Germany. They'll be somewhere in the top there. And then as far as individuals go, we'll just run them down quick. We got Charlotte Desjardins from Great Britain in first. We have Cornelissen from the Netherlands in second. We have Spree from Germany in third. We have Hester. We have Hester in fourth. We have Peters in fifth now, so United States there in fifth. And we have Bechtelsheimer from the UK, Great Britain, in sixth. So that's how we're looking at it right now. And you're going to have to go and hold. What is everybody going to do over the weekend? No equestrian to watch. You're going to have to watch other things like badminton.
We're going to have to go ride our horses, Glenn.
Synchronized diving, you know, the big sports. Trampolining. I haven't seen that yet. Trampolining yet. But I'll be watching some tennis from over at Wimbledon. So that's where I'll be. I'll be glued to Bravo. Thank you, everybody, for joining us today. We appreciate it. Thank you, Jennifer, for filling in today. Jamie will be back on Monday, and we'll be back to talk about tennis and, you know, badminton and ping pong.
Cool.
Whatever else we can find. Yeah. You're going to have to hit the closing music because I can't get to it. My studio's down.
Oh, okay. Let me find it over here. Yeah. Open
so
it.
Goodbye,
here
everybody.
Have
a terrific weekend. Ride your horses. Get a ride in. Wear your helmet. Stay. Yelp. Something else. Neuter something over the weekend.
Go riding on the beach, folks. Go riding on the beach.